Welcome to Straight Talk on Health. I'm your host, Dr. Chet Zelaska. Straight Talk on Health is a joint production together with WGVU in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I examine the practical application of health information, nutrition, exercise, diet, supplements. I look at the science behind them and let you know whether it's something you may want to consider or not. You can check out other things that I do on my website, drchet.com, and please sign up for my free emails. In the United States, we have access to some of the freshest and healthiest foods grown or produced here or from anywhere in the world. At the same time, we have access to some of the most highly processed foods that are designed to appeal to the flavors we love, like sweet, salty, sour, and umami. Now that other flavor, bitter, I don't remember much about that. I myself love salty and crunchy. My question is, why don't we make better choices? It has always mystified me, especially because I fall into that group that makes poorer choices more days than I don't. Looking back on when I chose to make significant changes in my lifestyle, there was always a reason that was probably only significant to me. When I quit smoking years ago, I couldn't face a classroom of students to talk about the hazards of smoking while smoking myself, so I quit. But before that, even though I understood the health ramifications, it wasn't enough why to quit. I used to drink beer. And back when I ran almost every day, it was in the 4 to 6 bottles of beer a day. The attitude among a lot of us runners was, I earned this, with all the time spent on running. I only drank one brand and one style, and it took me years of trying to get it exactly the flavor I wanted. I didn't drink to get drunk, but just to take the edge off a little. But there were consequences, not drastic, but interfering with my life. I decided that I didn't want to spend another second of my life where anything interfered with my ability to think clearly from the second I woke up until the second I fell asleep. Any type of alcohol requires the body to recover from it, and that requires time, close to 18 hours. So I quit. And now I'm at the point where eating has reached that level of interference. When food tastes good, mostly something I prepare for Paula and I like to get my share and then some because, you know, it'll never taste as good reheated as it does right then. But it takes time to digest big meals. I can't quit eating, but I can control snacking and the volume I eat. And that's my goal for 2026. Eat less. With the new year approaching, it's time to examine what aspect of health you want to improve. Maybe it's eating better with more veggies and fruits. Maybe it's getting some regular exercise. Whatever it is, make a decision to make the change and stick to it. You may have to try different tactics to ultimately be successful, but you can do it as long as you don't quit trying. You just have to find out your why, even if it's only meaningful to you. It's that important. Let's move on to melatonin. Medical conferences are always a great source for controversy. Why? Studies are presented that haven't been peer-reviewed, but may have had a great press release to advertise them. A major cardiac medical organization met recently, and the scientific sessions didn't disappoint. The abstract review that caught my attention was based on an analysis of a large database of subjects from a variety of countries that demonstrated that melatonin use to treat insomnia could lead to an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and hospitalizations. Now, the researchers chose subjects who were diagnosed with insomnia and took melatonin for at least 1 year based on their medical charts. They were matched with control subjects on a variety of characteristics, including age, height, weight, and many more variables, who were also diagnosed insomniacs but did not report any melatonin use. The subjects were added over a period of 5 years before the data were finally analyzed. Now, the abstract stated that there was a 90% greater risk of cardiovascular disease diagnosis in the melatonin group. Further, there was a 350% increased risk of being hospitalized in the melatonin group, and a 100% increased risk of dying from all causes as well. Whoa! Is it time to throw out the melatonin? Well, keep in mind something I've said repeatedly over the years when results are presented in percentages. Find out what the numbers are that make up those percentages. So before we toss the melatonin, let's put the unreviewed abstract in perspective. The simplest way is to convert the percentage of risk into actual percentages. Now, the study reported that the risk of developing heart failure was over 90%. That's true, but is based on the percentage of insomniacs that didn't use melatonin at 2.7% versus 4.6% in those that did use melatonin. The same logic was used for hospitalizations, 6.6 versus 19.0, and mortality, 4.3% versus 7.8%. It still seems like a significant risk, but there's one more number that's important: the total number of potential subjects for the study. Now, in the United States, the average number of adults that are diagnosed with insomnia is about 12%. With 268 million adults in the United States, that means about 32.2 million people have chronic insomnia at some point in their life. The percent diagnosed insomniacs is about the same in all westernized countries around the world. Now, the researchers used a database that claims to have 150 million de-identified electronic medical records in its database. So my question is, how did the number of subjects get to only 120,000? It should have been at least 15 million. Yes, the subjects were matched for a variety of criteria, including age, gender, medications, and other factors, but still, that's an awful lot of lost subjects. Even without the diagnosis of insomnia, other diagnoses, such as depression and other mental health diagnoses, can result in insomnia. They can also predispose people to heart failure as well. Those subjects might also have been included, which can affect the results. The most significant information was not collected, and that's the data on the actual over-the-counter melatonin use. Now, to their credit, the researchers did cite that as an issue, but there are no data as to how much melatonin was actually used by the subjects who took melatonin. There's no record of melatonin use by persons in the non-melatonin group if they didn't report it as a supplement they used to their physician. There are more questions, but you know, that's enough to call the results into question. Now, perhaps after the peer review process, the data collection will be more clear, as well as the data analysis. But for right now, the best thing that could be said is that they distributed a great press release that caused a lot of concern. As for the actual research evidence, there's no reason to modify melatonin use at this point. However, it is always a good idea for you to report what supplements you're taking to your healthcare provider. If and when the actual study is published, I'll let you know the rest of the story on this study. And that's all the time I have for this episode. If you like this podcast, please hit the share button and tell your friends and colleagues about it. Until next time, this is Dr. Chet Salasko saying, health is a choice. Choose wisely today and every day.